the shiur should be Aliyas Neshama, and the schus for Nachman David ben Avraham. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The shiur that I want to give, actually, it's a fascinating shiur. It's in many ways the concepts of this particular shiur is very, very unknown to most people. But the Ramchal has a whole chapter on it. And that is, what is the origin of the concept of Jew and Goy? He calls it the Inyan of Yisrael, the Umus Ha'ilam, Jews, the Jewish people, and the nations of the world. What is the relationship, and so on? And what are the origins? And what does it really mean today and in the future in terms of Olam Haba? Who has Olam Haba? Do Goyim have Olam Haba? If they do, how, and so on? So I really want to talk a lot about that, you know, and so on, you know. Ramchal says something very interesting, and it could be actually looked on very, very interestingly, almost as racist. But it doesn't really make a difference, you know. The truth is the truth, and that's the end of it, you know. If I said that an animal and a human being are two different species, would you say it's racist? No, it's true. You know, it's not a racist remark to say a human being and an animal are two different species and so on. But, so therefore, what the Ramchal says is very interesting, that even though the Jews, Israel, looks like everybody else, their humanity is the same as everybody else's humanity. But the Ramchal says, however, what you're really looking at is two different types of species, which is interesting. That in many ways, they are completely different. There is a common denominator, commonality. Everybody, we're all human. But the type of human is very different. It's almost like, you know, sometimes there's these kind of, you ever see these kind of movies? You know, I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, they have these kind of movies that, you know, where they all of a sudden, super race comes over and takes the United States. It's a classic Hollywood plot, you know. And all of a sudden, this super race is super. Like, each person has an IQ of 10,000. You know, we're talking about the average IQ of an American, not American, but a per human being. You know, I hate to talk about an IQ of Americans. But an IQ of a human being is like 100, the average, right? And a genius is, let's say, 130, 140, right? And a super genius is like 170, you know, and so on. And there were such people that had that type of IQs, and so on, you know. And all of a sudden, this race from another planetary system in some other galaxy, they come to the Earth and they got IQs of 10,000, you know. So what would you say? And let's assume they even look like you. You know what I'm saying? What are you going to say? Well, you know, there's, you say, hey, the difference between this and this, right, is two different species. They may be human, right, or look like humans, but this is not the same thing as a human being. In a certain sense, that is true of a Jew and a Goy. Like I say, even though commonality, they are the same, but they are two different types of humans, you see, and we will understand what that means. And I don't mean it in any way as a racist remark at all. First of all, that's what the Ramchal says, that's Kabbalistic, and so on. The question is, what does that mean and why? How do we understand that? In what way are they different, you see? Now, what is important to understand, ultimately, which we will see, is that a Goy can also become this kind of super race. They can become Jewish. You see, so we're not talking about something that is absolutely the Jewish people and absolutely the non-Jews. No, a non-Jew, which we know, can become a Jew. And therefore, he can also attain the status of a super race in that sense. You see, So that's an important difference. You know, you're not permanently, a goy is not permanently affixed to that status and so on. But the concept of a Jew really is a super Jew, a superman in that sense. You know, and the concept of a goy is an average, ordinary person. The question is, what does that mean? How did it start? And, well, how does it affect humanity in general, you know? So that's really what we're getting into and so on. For that, in order to understand this, we have to understand, okay, the beginning of everything, which is Adam HaRishon, the first man. And really, what did God want? So what Adam HaRishon is, obviously, is a human being. But what you have to understand is Adam HaRishon is not a human being. He is a superhuman being. What does that mean? He doesn't inhabit a physical world. Adam HaRishon is not physical. He inhabits a different type of plane of reality or existence. In many ways, it's called Olam Yetzirah. And that's really what he inhabits, you see. What kind of an inhabitant or place is that? In which it's not this world. It's not a physical world. It is a spiritual domain, okay? And that is called Olam Yetzirah. And that's what he inhabits, okay? And therefore, what type of a place is that? It is a place where the presence of God pervades that world. In other words, you're always conscious in many ways of God himself. There's no hesh there. There's no concealment of God. Now, we don't know what that was. We have no inkling of that type of experience. But it's a different reality that he's in. Although he's still human in that sense, but it's not the reality that we know of, which is a physical universe. In that reality, what his job is, to conquer that limitation, which is the fact that he is spiritual, but he's not spiritual enough. He can grow to a much greater degree. His test, which I once spoke about, is this problem. He knows that God is incredibly powerful because he's all of a sudden comes in on the sixth day. He takes a look around. He says, wow, what a place. I didn't do this. But then who did? He knows God created the world. He's aware of that. And he takes a look at that world and he said, this is beyond belief. You see. So he has that understanding that God is the ultimate cause or power. What he doesn't know is that God is the only thing that really exists, and he emanates from God. That is removed from his consciousness in order to give him a test. Now we know that the Satan tries to, in the form of a snake, tries to convince him that what? That he can become God. You know, v'yishem kelokim, that's what he offers Chava, that his argument to her, and she wants to become God. Adam wants to become God, you see, or else why would she even eat the fruit? Because she would like to become God. Now, we know that obviously she can't become God. It's the whole concept of what's called Yichud Metziusoi, that only God exists and nobody else really exists. Everything emanates from God, so how can you become God if you're merely some type of an emanation? And even after you emanate, you don't exist like God at all, and so on. So that's the truth of the matter. But she wants to become God, so she eats from the fruit. So therefore, what we understand then is that instead of Adam and Chava resisting this temptation, they would have become much more spiritual. What does that mean? What does it mean to become more spiritual? They would have become aware of the presence of God to millions of degrees greater. And they would have therefore become close to God. They would have achieved an unbelievable status of dvekus. That's what they would have achieved, you see. So therefore, spiritual growth really is what they have to become. And that's what God wanted for Adam and Chava, to achieve that level of spirituality. Now, what's also interesting is that's Adam and Chava. What about the rest of the human race? Whatever happened to them, right? Because there's more than just Adam and Chava. So what the Ramchal says, which is very interesting, is that there would have been other people, or there would have been the whole human race, or whatever constitutes, you know, a human population, you know. But they would have had that in Olam Haba. In other words, that's how everybody would have emerged. They would have given birth in whatever whatever that means. I mean, obviously we're missing a lot of details and so on. But they would have given birth to neshamas. That would have been like Adam. But the interesting thing about that is that these individuals that would have been the products or the offspring of Adam and Chava, right, would have enjoyed the exact level of spirituality as Adam and Chava, you see. So there would have been what's called offspring, descendants of Adam and Chava in Olam Haba, you see. And the level of spirituality would have been exactly like Adam and Chava. So therefore, even in Olam Haba, there would have been a race, so to speak, of these people, the descendants of Adam and Chava. That's what should have been. Okay. Now, there are problems. Ramchal doesn't answer these problems. What do you mean? If they would have been exactly like Adam and Chava, but they didn't do any work for that. So, as I once said, how is that a tikkun of Nahamad Iksufa? Whatever. Ramchal does not address that problem. In other words, why would they deserve to be the same as Adam and Chava if they didn't do anything for it? What would their merit be, you know, to deserve that type of state? He doesn't mention that. He leaves that problem out. But what he does say is, therefore, is that they would have merited that status of Adam and Chava in Olam Haba. And that would be the perfection of man. Olam Haba is a place where everybody would experience God in a way which we cannot even begin to understand. And that would be the greatest perfection of all, to experience God that way. But what's important is that's what God wanted originally from Adam, and there would have been an entire population, whatever the number would be, and it would be a finite number, by the way, and so on, of descendants, offspring of Adam and Chava in Olam Haba. That was the original intent of God. That's a very important idea. Okay. But something happened. What happened as a result of all this? Okay. We see, therefore, that Adam and Chava had a tremendous level of kedusha, of spirituality. And like I said, and what God wanted is that they should strive and achieve much greater levels of spirituality by avoiding the temptation of the snake. Okay. And that would have ushered in, ultimately, the future world would ultimately have happened, and all mankind would then enjoy those results. What happened was something, now, one more thing, that even the offspring themselves would have been of different levels. Not in the sense of reward or holiness, but the Ramchal distinguishes. There's Adam, his descendants would have what's called root souls. They would be, the direct descendants of Adam. And those neshamas that would have been born or emerged from Adam and Chava would have had an incredible closeness to Adam and Chava. And they are called root neshamas, shrashim. These shrashim, root neshamas, would give now birth, in whatever that means, to what's called derivatives or descendants. They are called anophim, or branches, just like there's a branch and a root and a branch, you know, and so on. So there are levels of emergence, so to speak. It doesn't mean that the branches are less than the roots in the sense of kedusha or holiness, but it does mean that there is some type of a order in terms of neshamas, those that directly come from Adam Chava, and then those that directly come from the roots themselves. There's an entire sort of what's called a hierarchy. And that's what should be in Olam Haba. Okay. Now, the problem was, of course, is Adam and Chava sinned. So what they did is they entered a terrible degraded state. There were two things that happened, or several things that happened. And this is very important. One of them is that the world that they inhabited, which was an Olam Yetzirah, which was a spiritual domain, okay, they fell into what's called a physical world. That's what happened. So in some sense, their residence changed to a physical planet, which is, of course, where we are now. They became physical. They lost that spiritual cognition or that spiritual consciousness that they had. So basically, two things happened. One is that they became physical, which automatically meant that their perception of God was drastically reduced. The physical world no longer has the obvious containment of God or the obvious presence of God. No longer. We don't see God at all, you see, because physicality is a barrier to experiencing spirituality. So they would have lost, and they did lose, they lost their consciousness and their ability to perceive God, the presence of God. That was the first thing that happened. And that's a major shift in the world. The second thing that happened is that evil, or the Satan, now became dominant in their lives. While they were in Olam Yetzirah, the Satan, as the mouthpiece, the snake, and so on, has no connection to that world, you know, had no connection. It's not clear the relationship between the Olam Yetzirah and this world, the physical world. But in any case, when they became physical, they became subject to the influence and the power of the Satan, which is a Malach, who now tries to influence them to sin. That was the result of them becoming physical. So you have two things. One is that they entered a world of darkness, no spirituality, okay, or very little, if any, you know, no ability to perceive and feel the presence of God at all, you see. And not only that, they are now subject to the wiles of a being that wants to get them to defy God. And I once spoke about that in a shir. And what that means is that the Yetzer Hara now tries to convince them of a very important idea, that you are independent of God. And this is the problem. All of us walk around with that illusion, or should I say, delusion. Like I once said, the problem with people is that they all think that they either are God, or they want to become God, or they want to kill God. It's one of the three, you see. Because in the end, we all want to stress ourself. We want to believe that we are independent of God, that we exist independently of God, and therefore we have independent wills. We can do whatever we want. So the Satan now tries to get us to understand or to believe in that delusion, that we are somebody's independent of God. And that's his power, and so on. And besides that, they now have physical needs, which were very different than the need that Adam had in Olam Haba, before the sin, and so on, you know. So Adam changes in a radical way. Like I say, he becomes physical. Therefore, the whole world of spirituality is now gone. The second thing is that they're now introduced as part of his physical body, a satanic figure, an influence, you know. Now, the name of the influence, or the way the Satan influences that body, I had mentioned many times, is called Zoyamah. Zoyamah is a force that the Satan can project, that can, that in many ways can connect your body, and you are now subject to whatever temptations or whatever influences that he has over you. But the problem, yeah.
How is the attempts of the Satan different before and after the Chet? Because it seems like they both revolve around the idea.
Well, yeah. So in the beginning, but Adam had a problem. He did not recognize Yichud Metziusoi. that God is the only thing that exists, even after he creates Adam, because Adam emanates from God. He knew God's yichud shlitasoi, that God is an incredible power and cause. You see, after the fall of man, we don't even recognize yichud shlitasoi. As far as we're concerned, we do things independent of God. We are independent causes. We don't need God at all. You know, I mean, we love him to help out, but we are true causes.
The difference is, before the chait, it was the challenge was Yeshua Novado.
Yeah.
After the chait, the challenge was compounded by Kochivel Zinyani.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And because you believe you're an independent actor besides God, so therefore I exist by my own power. I don't need God in that sense. So clearly the test range has changed, you see. Now, one of the problems is this, is not only Adam has become degraded, but remember I said that part of Adam is all the neshamas that were destined to be born, right? Well, they also became degraded. Because Adam, remember, Adam is the totality of all the souls that will ever be born. So therefore, if he becomes degraded, it's like a seed. You put a seed in the ground, yes? So the problem is, if you degrade that seed or you damage that seed, guess what? Then all the potential of that seed, which means to grow a tree, and that tree itself will have more seeds, right? All of it is damaged, because that's what the seed means. It's called the sheresh, right? So everything is damaged, which means the entity itself, which is another tree, right? And the second thing is that tree itself will also have more seeds. All of it is damaged. So what Adam did is not only he degraded himself, because he is a totality of all souls, right? But he degraded all the souls that are potentially within him. So even if they're born, they're all born degraded. They're all born, contaminated. So this became a major problem, because that means not only Adam or Chava, but all potential souls now became degraded, because they themselves would now become physical and they would have the Zayama. You see? So what's interesting now is you have an entire human population, so to speak, that are no longer supermen, or I should say super beings, but they are now ordinary people that are substantially degraded and physical, that is fully influenced by a satanic figure using his zoyamo, his contaminant power, to connect to you and to try to convince you that you are somebody, and try to give you the needs where he's trying to say, hey, you're somebody, go after it. You want to do this? No problem. You see? And that's how he destroys you. Because not only does he convince you you're somebody, but if you are somebody, you can do whatever you want, and he supplies the needs, physical needs, that you want to go after. And therefore, you go. You see? So we now have a new type of population. Adam and all the other people that come out of him, right? They're now physical. They're not spiritual. They're filled with tumah, zoyama, right? And therefore, this is now the state of man, which obviously is a very bad state and so on. And this is now the setup that we now have to understand. And we will see how all of this ultimately led to what mankind did. And not only that, but also what happened, that in this state, all of a sudden mankind became divided between the concept of a Jew and the concept of a Goy, because it all traces its origin back to this destruction, the degradation of man. And therefore it requires a new type of process in order to do what's called what the tikkun. Now we know what the goal is. The goal is this. The goal is mankind must get back to the original state of Adam before the sin. This is the problem. You see, in the beginning was a one-step process. You are in Olam Yetzirah, so all you need to do is go up. You see, by not eating from that tree, you would go up. into Kedusha, into Olam Haba. But now you're physical, so it's a two-step process. You need to go from the physical to the spiritual, and then from the spiritual, you now can go up. So it now becomes what used to be a one-step process has now become a two-step process. And it's not just, and therefore that process, or that job, which is called tikkun, you need to rectify yourself, you need to correct the degradation, that is a two-step process, and therefore that entails a different mechanism. How do we get out of this process? How do we get out of the state, that the fallen state, let's look at it that way, or the degrading state, back into Adam Rishon before the sin? And once you could do, you're in the stage of Adam Rishon before the sin, which means you are now back in a spiritual dimension, and then you go up to a much higher dimension. That is the framework of which is the, we begin to understand the history of mankind vis-a-vis the tikkun process and so on, you know. I will continue next week, and we will see how all of this ultimately leads. Who is everybody, really? Who's a Jew, a Goy? You know, what happens to Jews? What happens to Goyim? And so on, based on this process. And how history has changed. It's really what it's about. Okay. Any questions?
Question. When Hashem says, Vayom Hashem El Avram, Vayom Hashem El Moshe, are these speaking from Olam HaYetziyah?
When Hashem says what? Say again?
When Hashem speaks to someone, Vayadav Hashem El Moshe.
Yeah.
Where is that emanating? Well, what all the ten spheres? Where is Hashem speaking to man?
Where is he?
Where
is God?
Soif, yeah, where is God? Where, is it directly from?
Yeah.
Ein Soif? Or directly from?
It's directly from the Ein Soif, yeah.
What's passing all those ten spheres?
However God speaks to man, you know? I mean, God is referred to as a being that is immanent and transcendent. That's where we speak about God. What does that mean? God is transcendent in the sense that we have no idea where God is. You see, God is beyond the Ein Sof, and that's a whole understanding which I once spoke about. Who is God? You know, we don't know where God is.
You said that Ein Sof represent God, made Ein Sof represent.
Represent him, yes. And we say that God is imminent. Imminent means, hey, he's right next to you, right? So in some way, the transcendent God, you know, can talk to you, and he becomes imminent to you. We have no idea how. We can just say that God is transcendent. He transcends everything. And we say God is imminent, which means that he is next to you. He can talk to you. You see? You know, we have no idea where he is. But one thing we do know, God talks to you. However he does it.
It's coming directly from...
So, you know, you could say... So, yeah, so the transcendent being called God is talking to you. How he does that is because in a certain way he's become immanent to you. You know, and immanent means he somehow breaches the vast gulf between you and him and is able to address you. But the one talking to you is God. Transcendent God.
All
what?
The spheres, all the ten spheres.
Yeah.
It's direct.
Yeah, well, Atzmus is transcendent, yeah.
It bypasses all that. And the Hebrew letters, you know, the Kedusha, the letters, the speech is coming by Dabba Shem Moshe.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to mention, which I didn't, because, you know, I might as well mention it here, you know. Remember one thing, that Adam Rishon really is a neshama. He's all neshamas. It's called the grand neshama. Adam Rishon has a grand neshama. It means everybody's in him. You know, and that's really what it is. It's like this ultimate, what do you call it, grand composite of everybody as one neshama. It's really what it is, right? And that one neshama really is a facsimile or a copy of the ten spheres. And that's why man is a model of the ten spheres. You know, the ten forces. A sphere is a spiritual force of which we have no idea. So Adam really has all those ten. He's got Keser, Chochma, Bina, right? Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Yesod, and Malchus. Those are the ten spheres. Now, when Adam produces offspring, right, he's going to produce offspring from those different ten spheres. some guys have come out of chesed, some guys come out of, you know, gvura, you know, and so on. Like Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, just to give an example, so Avram comes out of what was chesed, you know. In other words, man is connected to the spheres. So the power of spiritual force called chesed, ten spheres. We are a model of those ten spheres. Somehow incorporated in us, although ten spheres, it's almost like that's our DNA. Our real DNA is the ten spheres, even though it's spiritual. I forget about the physical aspect of man. But the spiritual aspect of man is that our DNA, so to speak, are ten spheres. Okay? Now, Adam has these ten spheres, right, in him. He's the greatest being that ever was created that has these ten spheres. Now, when he gives offspring, what does he do? The spheres themselves generate the offspring, you see? So therefore, you will be part of a sphere of Adam HaRishon in a much greater concentrated way, you see? So if Avraham Avinu comes out of Adam, which he does, ultimately, right, and so on, so he's going to emerge from this specific sphere of force called Chesed. Yitzchak is going to come out, he's going to be Gvura, you know what I'm saying? And so on. Yaakov and Esav is going to come out of Tiferes, because Esav is also an Av. And they both come out of the Tiferes of Adam HaRishon. Interesting, you know?
But David HaMelech is pure Gvura.
Yeah, no.
He had
so,
from the Ovs.
And then you have, and so on. Then you have Netzach and Hoid, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, and Aaron HaKohen, Yisoid is Yosef. And Malchus is going to generate David HaMelech, and so on. But I'm just trying to show you that. And therefore, every person that lives is going to come out of the majority of his concentration will come out of one of the spheres. And in many ways, that determines your characteristics, depending on which sphere you come out and so on, you know. So I'm just saying, so his offspring is going to come out of all different types of spheres, where in the spheres and how they're located, all that. So that's how you emerge and so on, you know. And ultimately speaking, you're all part of the body of Adam HaRishon. I'm just saying the relationship between the offspring and Adam HaRishon is really they emerge from the spheres of Adam, you know, and then they come out and that determines your characteristics and so on, you know. There were people who could tell you, like, where did you come out of? You know, and that would give you a clue and a hint as to who you are, what you are, and it's maybe in a certain sense, what are you supposed to do with yourself, you know, depending on where you are, you see. That's why people who come out of one sphere may not be able to do something that somebody else can do because he comes out of another sphere. You know, this is infinitely detailed and so on. I'm just kind of giving you a bird's eye view of what does it mean to have offspring and so on. When I'm talking about offspring means, to have some type of progeny that emerges, just as a physical person. No, we're talking about spiritual emergences of souls. And each neshama will have consciousness and so on. But when you put it all together, it's all called the grand neshama, and that's how everybody emerges. I thought that's important framework to understand. Because next week I'm going to go into, you know, okay, we now have reached two levels, Adam and Chava, and all the offspring at the level of Adam before the sin. Now we're down to that Adam level after the sin. But we see the same basic thing, except before that they were not degraded, and now they are degraded, physical, zoyama, and so on. And then from there we now have to understand, okay, now what happened in terms of mankind's history? How do we wind up with all this? And so on. We have Avram, 2,000 years before Avram, and then there's all the nations of the world, like what's going on here, you know, and so on. So I'll continue that next week. It's a tremendous topic, very fundamental. Yeah.
Do individuals only from one sphere apiece, or can there be are there composites in each person?
That's an interesting question, because you have to remember one thing, that let's take the sphere called chesed, yes? But chesed itself consists of 10 subspheres, the same one, chesed, gvur, and so, yeah. You know, it's an infinite, it's chesed itself has 10 spheres.
Permutation?
I forgot what you call it, and chesed of that, well, there's chesed, then there's a subset of 10 of chesed. But then the chesed of that subset itself has 10. And then each one has 10, yes,
every
and so on.
Sphere is like that?
Every sphere has an infinite amount of subsets, each one having a subset, and then in that self there's a subset. That's really the structure of the whole Bria. All creation is subsets. There's the original 10, and then there are all kinds of, each one has a subset, and each one of those has a subset. It's an infinite progression, whatever you call it, or descent. Of different levels over and over again. So ultimately speaking, even if you emerge from chesed, you could still have gvura as a subset, because that's within your chesed. You see, it's obviously a tremendous calculation.
That people do, each individual does
have two combos, yeah.
One primary sphere, but then...
Then you have all the different...
Ping pongs down to the
subsets. Yeah, if you're into ping pong, I imagine you could use that as an example.
Is this a cellular looking at what you just explained, is that the cellular kingdom? Do we have these spheres, spiritual powers?
Yeah, because the way God manifests himself to us is as the spheres, 10 spheres.
That's the cellular kingdom.
That we mirror that image of 10 spheres, and that is the cellular kingdom, yes.
Because if those 10 spheres, the image is a reflection of Hashem?
Correct, that's right.
Hashem?
Yes, yeah. But the details are infinite. I can't even begin to. Oh yeah, it's like, you know, infinite. What do you call progression, descent, and so on? It's infinite. I mean, how do we even figure out? So it's interesting. You know, you probably need a GPS to figure out, like, where in this are you? You know, but where you are, by the way, determines who you are, what you are, and you're also your position in the tikkun process. All this depends on where you are. If you come out of your side, you got a different position, different tests, character traits, everything is different depending on where you are, you see? And for that, you know, to somebody to tell you who you are, you know, obviously there were Mekubalim that could do that. The Ari certainly could do that, and so on, you know, and that would tell you a great deal about, obviously, it would tell you everything you, it's a true identity revealer. That, and you know, and so on, you know, in terms of...
Adoption,
in fact, the two greatest determinants, I'll just close with this, the two greatest determinants of who you are and what you're supposed to do, there are two of them. One is the initial emergence from this framework, the initial emergence, right? And the second thing is the Gilgulim, the incarnations that you have to come back again and again in order to complete your taking process. Both of these things, in many ways, determine what you have to do and where your place is in the whole scheme of Ilum Habo. You see? And only a mind of God can figure this out, or can keep track of this.
Is that what made Ben Hazen go insane? Ben Hazen?
No.
Went to parties?
No. That's
Ben Hazen sounds?
Yeah, that's
all. Why did he handle it, Ben Hazen?
I couldn't handle it.
He
was
only Shimon Avuya.
No,
Ben Azazel.
Yeah, that's why.
He came out Shalem
and Ben Azazel. It went crazy.
Well,
he didn't go crazy. Oh, no. One, Ben Azazel died.
Died from the body. He couldn't handle it.
No, because the Dveikus was so great. His neshama could not handle the separation between him and God. He just saw too much.
Where you said that the creator,
Chava
wanted to be a creator.
Ben Azza and Ben Zoyma, anyway, each one, you know, when died and Ben Zoyma.
What the Rav just explained to us, all these unending.
No, he was not even, no, that, what I just described now is so basic, so fundamental, because it determines your being. No, he wasn't to what they call Olam Yetzira. While he was physical, he ascended to Olam Yetzirah. That's called Ruach HaKodesh. And that world is so attractive. There's so much Ruchness in that world that he just died. You know?
Paradise?
That's Paradise, yeah.
Is that world Olam Yetzirah?
Olam Yetzirah, yes. That's called Ruach HaKodesh, yeah. But not because of the spheres. Uh-huh. We don't know. You can't see a sphere. They have no way of looking at, you know? You know, and so on, you know? But But in any case, so, you know, I'm just saying, because I want to just show you where we come out of, because you now understand that when Adam and Chava have kids, whatever they're called, you know, and so on, it's going to be somewhere located in their composites, you know, and that determines who you are and what you are and ultimately what happens and so on, you know. But right now we're at the level of understanding that humanity, so to speak, is now degraded, you see, and the question is, who and how and when are we going to jump back into Adam Rishon before the Chet? Because that's what we have to do. The job is to get back to his state before the Chet. And it only happened once in history that we did it. Matan Torah. Anyway.
That right now, with science creating things, is that the part where we become creators? I mean, the progression that
I don't see the question.
Abraham was told, Salih was, Fanai Be'er Tamim, that Hashem is going to allow the people to get in front of him, which means he's going to allow people to create, to be creators, innovators.
Innovators, not creators.
Science is allowing us to be a creator.
What about it? What's your point?
So that the point is, Nakuda is that man can become as a creator.
No, he can't become a creator. He can discover and form from materials that exist beforehand. You could put it together. Man cannot create, but he certainly can put together items that in that form never existed, but he can reassemble things into a new form. Well, man is a former.
A former, but...
Not a creator.
But the fact that they found the God particle and they're discovering Tchias Meisim right now through stem cell research, isn't that in the line of becoming a creator? I mean, it's not like...
But it's not... You're using a word that is not appropriate.
An arrogant term, the God particle. Who named that?
Him, or what's his name? The guy from Chicago.
Brink.
No, what's his name? He called the God particle. What's his name?
Scientist was patting themselves on the back.
It's the Higgs boson. That's what it is. Because it is responsible for matter. The Higgs boson is a field, right? The Higgs is they call the Higgs field. And it's really an energy field, whatever it is, you know, and that somehow can allow itself to coalesce into matter. So protons, neutrons, electrons, all of this comes out of the Higgs, depending on the field and so on. He calls it the God particle because it's really the God field, not the God particle. There is a Higgs boson, which is a particle, which itself emerges. But the real thing is the Higgs field that gives rise to mass. So he called it the God particle because he wanted to get it popular. Oh, what's the guy's name? With an L. Oh, what's his name? It's a guy out of Chicago, and I think he died already. He was a Nobel laureate.
Promised Abrams that if you're Tumim, if you completely...
But you're using
then Hashem will give you the ability to create these things.
You don't create anything. You form. You bring together in a new form. That's all. But that you want to look at that as creation, fine. But it's certainly to do something that was never done before. You know, fine. But that's not creation. You just reform. You reassemble items into a new composite. And that is a new thing. That's all.
Wasn't that what Chava was asking?
But why? What does that have to do with what I'm speaking? Unless you want
to... That Chava wanted to be a creator. So
No. Well, she wanted to be God.
Right.
Which can create, yes.
And where is she creating? From matter that's already formed.
No, she wanted to bring things into existence out of nothing. That's what creation really is.
Yesh
Ma'ayin is creation.
It says Yesh Ma'ayin.
Yeah, that's what it is. A whole different, you know. But it's two different. That's why we don't create anything. We just reform or reassemble stuff into a different way. You know what I'm saying?
It's all.
But I mean, listen.
We're in the beginning stages now. It could be.
No.
No.
The only way. Let me tell you this. Okay. The only way. The only way I can make sense of your concept, right, is to create something out of an energy field. Because that's really what happens. We live in a soup. I don't know if you realize that. We live in soup. What type of a soup, right? It's not vegetable soup, not mushroom soup. The soup we live in, right, is the Higgs field. We live in a soup of energy. Now, we don't know what energy is, right? But we live in a soup of pure energy that pervades all the entire universe, okay? Therefore, now, in that soup, somehow part of that soup coalesces, and bingo, there's electron. Mass or particles emerge from the soup of energy. You see, but even in that concept, you have to have the soup first. You have to have the energy field. You see, then if you have the energy field, then things can coalesce, depending on, that's all theories of how it vibrates, you know, and so on, you know. What can emerge is electrons, neutrons, protons, and quarks and all that, but that's all part of a field. See, what is a field? Nobody really knows. What is energy? Nobody knows. But energy does cause motion. But nobody knows what it is, you see? And so the closest thing we can come to creating is to get the soup to create a particle, you know? But even that has to have a soup of energy soup before you create the particle, you see? That's the closest. But we can't do that. We have nowhere near. Maybe by manipulating certain, you know, we to see particles dissolve into soup. You know, all of a sudden you see an electron or whatever that is, right? You know, and bingo, it disappears. Where'd it go? And the answer is, it went back into the soup. It dissolved into the energy field. There's a phenomenon called tunneling. You know, let's say an electron is moving toward a negative barrier, right? Now we know the electron is negative, and we don't even know what negative means. What's a charge? Nobody knows. But all of a sudden, the negative electron is moving toward this negative barrier, and it cannot go through because negative and negative repel, right? So all of a sudden, it's called tunneling. That's what they call it, you know, the electron disappears and reappears on the other side of the barrier. You see, and that happens. According to quantum mechanics, that can happen. You see, in fact, it's possible, although the odds are stupendously impossible. Oh, a guy, if you go up against the wall, it's possible statistically that you will completely disappear and reemerge at the other side of the wall. Now, in comic books, that happens all the time. You know, but in the real world, it's pretty dangerous. You know what I'm saying? You know,
mechanics says that could happen.
Yes, yeah, it's called tunneling. Yeah, it could happen. That theoretically could happen, but you know, I don't think it ever happened. There's a statistical probability where you will disappear, right, and reemerge. You know, maybe the reason why we don't know about it because everybody that disappeared never reemerged. Maybe that's why we don't know anything about it. You know, but that's. But remember, even then, you need to dissolve, so to speak, into the soup of energy, and then you'll pop out again on the other side in the same energy field. Yes, yeah, Star Trek. What do they call that thing when you
beam
me down, Scotty?
Scotty, beam me up.
Yeah. Anyway, but other than that, ain't happening.